It is SharePoint Dev Weekly, episode 57. It is 28th of October, week before Ignite, which reminded me that we need to figure out what are we doing next week. But anyway, that's a separate topic. But this week, we do have a visitor, and we're recording the whole show. So depending on the time zone differences where the visitor is located, we might do the articles separately, but today we are sharing those with Gary. But let's agree with the introduction. Gary, who are you? What do you do for a living?
My name is Gary Trinder. So I'm a solutions architect at CPS. So we're a gold partner based in the UK. So I am based in the UK in the north of England. So about 200 miles north from London, which most people kind of know about the UK, outside of London, basically. But yeah, so I'm a dev team lead as well. I recently picked up as a responsibility. I've been working with SharePoint for about 10 years in various capacities. Yeah. First started in support, then moved into development, then into consultancy. So I've kind of started with SharePoint 2001, and then moved through WSS into Moss, SharePoint Align for about the last, since BPOS as well. So it's been around for a while. And just kind of riding the wave as a SharePoint guy in Office 365, that now SharePoint's this tiny little piece and there's a whole host of different things that we need to look at. So, you know, things like Teams and the graph as well. And Azure as well. It's taken up a lot of time, but it's all good.
Now, before we go there, actually, let's get back on to that discussion in a second. We've been reminded, Waldeck, that we need to introduce ourselves as well, because this might be somebody might be listening to this as a podcast. So my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a program manager from the Microsoft, and I'm one of the hosts within this SharePoint Dev Weekly. And Waldeck?
And I am the other host. My name is Vali Mostekas. I work at Rancor. I am Microsoft MVP. At Rancor, I am responsible for our products.
Yes, excellent, excellent. Now that all the practicalities and officials, but that's a good reminder. Now we're in episode 57, and that's somebody reminded us that when you're listening to stuff as a podcast, it would be worthwhile to kind of explain who you are.
It's on the line because you don't see anybody.
Exactly.
But I guess on the other hand, like 50 episodes in, you probably recognize the voices, or not.
If you haven't listened to us before.
Yes.
Land into a completely new thing. We'll come back on. Actually, that relates on the discussion which we had with Curry. Kind of, we always assume, because we work together with Waldeck and a few other people quite closely, we always assume that everybody knows about these things. But in reality, that's not necessarily the case. Because we live in the social media bubble because we promote the stuff and do YouTube videos and Twitter and Facebook and everything else. But that's not necessarily reality for the rest of the world, right? You kind of attach that.
I don't know. Yeah. I am still inside my bubble.
I don't want to know.
I don't want to go outside the bubble. It is good.
Don't burst the bubble.
Exactly. The bubble is safe.
It's interesting that I speak to customers, and first thing is usually, are you using PMP for provisioning? Are you using PMP.js for communicating with the APIs? And you kind of get a blank face. You either get the, I have no idea what you're talking about, or yes, of course I know. There's never an in between. And then you end up going, if you don't know, okay, I'm going to spend the next half an hour to an hour telling you about all this good stuff. It's really interesting. I think even social media, being in your own bubble, it's easy as consultants to kind of take that. Of course, don't you know this. But yeah, we still have people out there.
and I guess so. That'll be an interesting thing. I know if you guys recall, probably do, like a while back, there was this time when we would have this big TechNet, MSDN posters of things, like how to build an architecture.
There was a SharePoint developer tree. I still remember that.
Exactly. I mean, like you would have an overview, like very detailed. There would be like A2, A1 kind of thing, like real thing. And I think that we should have that for our PMP as well. Basically, okay, so if you haven't heard about it, let me walk you through the whole thing. Basically, it would be like a map.
Oh, well, sure. We should have a introduction, kind of a 5 minutes. These are the things. Talk about this, but that I think nowadays it should be more a video, right? rather than anything else.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's good to have something like when you go somewhere, you can leave it behind. And sure, you could leave video behind, but then like you would give people a USB stick or...
Sure.
Sometimes it's just good to have a thing like hanging in front of you on the wall. Like, hey, I know this one. I don't know that one. There is a URL on it.
Sure. That is a good idea. Now, if somebody wants to actually create us posters and share those on behalf of us, just kidding.
I mean, we would need to start with drawing like a napkin thing. Like, okay, what are the different things that we want to include there? And then somebody with, let's say, more visual skills could make it pretty.
Sure. Yeah. We'll get back to that at some point. Gary, related on your role, you're a team lead on the development platform. You actually started passionately talking about this one before we started recording.
No.
Exactly. But your kind of a point was that majority of the developers do not know how to contribute back, right? Even though they would like.
Yeah, I think a lot of worked with other development teams. We're very happy to use the tools, and you know, we know where to get the information, and we kind of rely on other people to fix issues or to add new features, and there's always willing people to do that. But in terms of the amount of people that will be using the tools against the amount of people actually actively contributing and adding to the projects, it's probably quite small. There's a big kind of culture shift almost to say that, yes, I can actually give back and the tools are there for me to do that. But it's quite a large jump to make as well, because if you're quite happy working within your own organization and you do things, it's a closed community. You know, it's just the people you're working with, whereas you go open source, you go to GitHub, it's open for everyone. And it's quite, it can be quite intimidating, but can also be quite liberating at the same time if you take the right approach. I think if you're open and say, you know, I'm trying to contribute, be active, I guess is one thing, you know, try your best and just go through the motions. And once you've gone through that a few times of contributing, it just becomes second nature and you kind of don't have to think, ooh, I found this issue or I put this fix in. You just think, I can put the fix in and I can push the fix straight away and that could be picked up. So that's good. And from a development team point of view, I want people to have that understanding, to have that basic kind of skill set of how do you contribute to an open source project, whether that's PMP or whether that's something completely non-Microsoft based.
Yeah.
It's a skill that I think more and more developers should have as a core. It should be one of the things that, you know, can you write JavaScript? Can you write C#? Can you contribute to open source? I think it's a key thing. You build up that knowledge in-house as well, which benefits everyone. I think it benefits the developers because they get exposed to something that they probably wouldn't have had in-house. And, you know, the skills and things that you can learn from other people is great. For me personally,
And that's the follow-up discussion or question. You're kind of answering that already. But what would you say for those people and team leads and CEOs and CTOs who are saying, why would I spend my time on open source? Because that's time away from invoicing and time away from actually doing customer engagement. What is the purpose of my company to actually contribute for Microsoft for free? That's insane. Because we do get that feedback as well.
I can understand that point of view. I think in terms of from reinvesting back into the tools that we're using as a development team is we are, one, supporting that project going forward, so it's less of a risk. It's less of a risk to go to a customer and say, oh, we're using this kind of random library that no one really knows about and we don't know about, but we're using it. Actually, no, we're using it and we're supporting it. If there's any issues, we can jump in there and fix it. I think there's lots of other benefits for teams as well. I think, you know, as a development house, if you know that a company is actively working towards community projects, I would think that that's a bit more of an interesting place to work as well, because you are giving back. And the other part of it is you're extending your development team to everyone who uses that that tool and who's contributing to that project as well. So you're lowering risk. It's more standardized. It's less proprietary as well. Yes, in-house we could actually go and build this, but why do we need to? When someone's already there and it's there for us to contribute to, why reinvent the wheel just because it's not, in quotes, you know, ours?
Especially if it's a large enough project, so it's not like a really simple thing to do in a few days, rather than, for example, the PMP provisioning engine is a good example. And sure, it should be in .NET Core, and yes, we're working on immediately when the season but it's one of those things where it has taken 5 to 6 years to get to this moment with that engine. So as an individual house, no, we want to build our own engine for do the provisioning of tenant level, the team structures and SharePoint structures and all of that. It's like, sure, spend a few months on doing that, you'll be back. Probably you'll realize that it's not a simple thing to do. So,
well, but I guess like there was time when people would do that, right? Because like it wasn't, open source wasn't as big, and like companies would have their own way of doing things, right? And I mean, at some point you arrive to the point where, wait a minute, so we have a month to spend. Will we build once again something that already exists and we can tap into, or are we going to spend that time to build something that we can distinguish ourselves from everybody else around us and have a USP on that?
Yeah. Plus customers are getting much more, let's say, intelligence or intelligent in general around these topics as well. So they are aware that there are certain things which come from open source, and then, which is a good thing, because then they can actually ask that, hey, can we use these things, because that will reduce the investments on the basics and then concentrate on our specific requirements. So
yeah, and that's such a big thing. As a consultant, we're bound to what our customers want. They want value. And if we can get there quicker and do less of the kind of the standard things and concentrate on the difficult things, then they're spending their money in the right place, rather than going, you know, it's going to take you a week to set up all this provisioning stuff. Well, why? It's a real big thing. And I think some people, they're quite happy to just keep reinventing the wheel, but it doesn't make you progress.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And it's definitely probably impacting also the recruitment. So because if people get to reinvent the wheel in every single project, it's like, I've done this 20 times. This is boring.
I am now very experienced.
Exactly. So anyway, so that's good. but for you personally, so you've been working and contributing on the CLI side of the house, right?
Yes.
So how did you end up going there? Are you using a Mac, or what was the kind of...
Yeah, that's it. I just used a Mac, and that was the only option for me. It was a bit strange. So I've always, like I said, going back to what I said before, I've always used PMP. I've used it for years. Always kind of had this, I really want to start contributing back to the project. So I kind of set myself just the personal objective to just do pull requests to as many repositories as I could. And just see if the, you know, is doing a pull request to DevDocs.
I need to check you out right away. So where have you contributed? No, just...
But you know, to PowerShell, to CLI, just go through the motions, just get used to pull requests and the code side of things as well. So yeah, so I put some pull requests into PowerShell, definitely to CLI, and I think the CLI kind of got me more than the rest in terms of what it's trying to achieve. From the technical side, of course, getting involved in the code, great. Really enjoyed doing that. Did things which I've never done before, so I was learning, which again, great. Always want to be learning.
As a classic SharePoint person, going to Node.js development is an interesting transition, right? So
yeah. I've kind of, in a way, been lucky. My SharePoint development days were kind of lucky in that I started with client-side development as my first very project I did. I was working in support, I saw that there was some really old Access database kind of projects lying around. We could get rid of them by using a SharePoint list and creating some front end. So I started using the APIs really early on in WSS version 3. Then I actually moved into being a developer, and then I started doing the WISPs, doing server-side code. But I was quite happy with SharePoint development. Settled, that was perfect for me because I had that background already. So moving into the CLI with Node.js was pretty straightforward because I had that kind of JavaScript background.
Yep.
Getting involved was great. It was a good experience because pushing those PRs, those first ones, as Waldeck will know, there were a couple that I couldn't even figure out where the issues were coming from with some of the pull requests that I was doing, but it was staying with it, making sure you learn, go through those motions. Now I'm quite happy with it. There's lots of things I don't know, but lots of things that I know that I'm going to learn. And I think that's probably key more than anything else. It's not what you know at the beginning, it's what you can learn as you go through. If you can spot where the mistakes were made, then you can fix them next time, and it just becomes an easier process.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's actually, well, that's kind of a classic journey on getting more closely involved and contributing on things, finding the right project, and then gradually starting to contribute, or then taking advantage. For example, David Warner is seriously helping a lot of people right now on getting to learn how to do pull requests on GitHub Dashboard. Of course, we have those videos recorded as well, but who watches videos? Well, somebody might.
Well, apparently we have an audience, right?
Oh, we do?
There's at least one person I know of who watches this, so.
That's you?
No, the person who edits the videos.
Who edits the videos, yes, that's true. Now that we do have a person who edits the video, we didn't used to have that for the first, 45 sessions.
Oh, that was you, right?
That was me, yes. That's I'm the jack of all trades. So, somebody needs to do the dirty job, so.
Aren't we all? I think over the years, I think just be working with SharePoint, you almost have to be. If you can't be that jack of all trades, then you're pretty limiting in what you can do. I think.
Well, but I guess on the other hand, like, it's so broad that, I mean, sure, there are folks who maybe touched all aspects of it, but it's like there are things that I've never done. Like, I would build internet sites on it for years, but for example, I've never used BDC. I've never built a workflow in SharePoint. Never ever. I just never had a use for that in my work.
Yeah.
Right? And there are probably 20 million other things that I've never done.
And now the situation, luckily, it gets more clarified now in Office 365. Like Gary said, related on the role of SharePoint is kind of a slightly reducing. Well, actually, I wouldn't say the role of SharePoint is reducing. I would say we're extending on the everything else on top of the SharePoint as well. Because in on-prem, SharePoint is the jack of all trades. It's a intranet, it's a collaboration.
Well, you don't have much of a choice, right?
That's like, true.
There is nothing else. Whereas in a cloud, you have logic apps, you have Flow, PowerRef, Power BI, you have Forms, you have Teams, you have Exchange. Like, there's 20 million other things to tap into, and it's so much easier because they are there, and you just tap into them as opposed to, okay, so this is using NTLM. Here I have Kerberos. Here I have something else. How do I cross-authenticate from all these things together? Just to be able to touch it, not to mention to use the API to get the data across, right?
Yeah. All of the SQL Server analyzing services, authentication challenges with Kerberos and all of that.
Yeah, passing tokens just to show the reports from SSRS on your SharePoint intranet. Yes. Like, oh, no.
Yeah, it was the old SharePoint used to be. Everything went into SharePoint, and companies would spend years moving everything in to then get into the cloud to then go, actually, we've moved everything into SharePoint. It was probably the good place to put things at the time, but actually now there's different considerations that you need to make. So whereas before SharePoint would be the answer, now it's, well, hang on, can't we just put this data in a Azure SQL database and then
or in Teams.
Or in Teams.
expose stuff to Teams, but we don't actually put stuff to Teams as such, because Teams doesn't have a storage as such, because that, again, that's in SharePoint, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Gary, jumping on there.
Or CDS, or in in a cloud somewhere, right? So
Exactly. Yeah, it is an interesting transition. Gary, but you work in UK as a consultant and been doing that for a while. How's the UK transition to the cloud look like nowadays? I know that it was trailing back. It was trying to catch up on Scandinavia and Netherlands and all of that. But what's the current situation?
I think certainly the smaller companies are they're going through transitions of IT companies in the past would have put servers in the corner of the room, and you know, you come along and say, actually, you don't need those file shares, you can use SharePoint. And you look at some small medium enterprises that you think, actually, these companies could become cloud native now. There's very little need for them to have that infrastructure. So I think there's a big shift, certainly in that space. I think a lot of companies are seeing cloud more as a realistic option, and that it can give them their advantages. I think it's different to how they would have seen things in the past. I think there's this, you know, if I can see my data in the corner of the room, then that's safe. and people will take that option, whereas, you know, putting it in the cloud is somehow viewed as risky, when we all know the security that goes around all of that data that, you know, small companies would never be able to achieve.
But I mean, even there, the moment you send a file over email, it's no longer in your corner room. It's gone. It's in the cloud already. And I mean, we've been doing that for years, right? So it's not a new shift, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in terms of the larger organizations, they're becoming more interested in the cloud, but they still want to have that core infrastructure to kind of settle back on. I think there's a lot of challenges there in terms of how people treat the cloud as well. You don't treat the cloud the same way as you treat your on-premises environments. You know, things like DevOps is a big shift. You know, if you've got VMs running in the cloud and you've got applications running in the cloud, then make them repeatable. There's all the options there for you to do that. Sure. Don't treat it that it should just, you know, never be touched or whatever. No, embrace the change, because that's where the advantage of the cloud comes. Not just hosting, but all of the lifecycle, like management tools around that, like Azure DevOps, you know, using
slots with flipping between the applications, services, and slots. And that's really great. Yeah, there's a lot of different options available there. Definitely. Now, sorry, Gary, just to come back on the security discussion. Old joke, I told this a few times in the past as well, but last night, it was a really great discussion. I think it was last Ignite in Orlando. We were on the booth, and there was me and a few others from the Microsoft side, and there was one guy who came and started having a discussion on, hey, so what about the security? Because obviously that this used to be the number one thing, and the cloud isn't secure. And then it's like, well, now, if you think about, for example, banking, do you keep your money rather by yourself, or put your money in the bank? Because bank has proper security, physical security. They have security on the things. Or do you actually hang it in home? And sure, you can have proper locks in your doors, but do you? Which one is safer? And that was kind of the analog that we were using, or one of the guys were using towards the customer. So in the same way, if you think about cloud, are you sure that, are you saying that Microsoft would not be as secure as you can actually secure your physical location and data centers and everything else? They are, which are, by the way, super secure. And the person, however, said, well, I think we can do a better job. And everybody was like, excuse me, where are you from? And then you're checking the
Amazon.
Name from, and the person was from Lockheed Martin. So one of the war and fighter manufacturers. Okay, true. Yeah, we don't have that material in our data center.
Well, yes and no. I mean, sure. But it's like when you really get to the point where you understand all the work that goes into the Microsoft cloud, securing that, keeping it up. Like, there is an army of IT, full-time IT staff just doing that. Like, these people operate the cloud full-time. It's not like a side job for someone else to do it. Like, let's spend 2 hours a week doing that. No, it's like full-time teams operating the cloud, right? And I don't think that many companies for whom the IT is not the core can say they do that.
Yeah, and the disaster recovery things, there's a physical backup, physical full backup of the whole data center in a different country or in a different state in the US, which is like, can you do the same? No.
Quite expensive. Of course you can. Like, you send USB stick and then it's no.
Yes, I copied that on my USB stick. I got it.
My SharePoint. Here is my SharePoint, right? God.
I lost my USB stick. No, where is it?
Yeah, it's kind of a strange world that discussion that you had with that guy about, you know, kind of build this better and we'll maybe. Well, that's maybe like 1% of the world. You know, it's a small fraction. I think a lot of people are scared off by those kind of stories when it didn't really relate to them directly. I mean, we do see a lot of people still going for hybrid, especially with SharePoint server. But it seems like even then, more things are going into the cloud. And what's left on-prem is a fraction of what used to be there. So.
Absolutely. Now, should we do some articles and let's get back on the closing in and having a random discussion on topics which we forgot about? So let me actually share my screen. Let's have a look on some articles for this week, and feel free to jump in anytime as well. So let me actually click there, and we'll see you on the left as well. Can I see what I'm sharing?
No.
Trying to work with this, people.
Yes, we can. There will be a SharePoint Saturday event in the world.
Yeah, you can. I understand that you can't see what I see because that's my eyes. But can you see what I'm sharing?
I'm sharing a lot, and you're sharing a lot because sharing is caring, right?
Yes. Be here the whole week. Now, okay, so SharePoint Saturdays. This weekend, there's a Calgary SharePoint Saturday coming up on Saturday. Surprise, surprise. Let's have a quick look on the speaker setup here as well. So this one is the only one on this weekend. There is a lot of familiar faces here as well. It's good to see the nice setup of sessions on the different topics as well. ET, 4T, 2P. Probably some sort of a tracks. There has to be. Yeah. App modernization, use the right automation tool. Okay, cool. Really cool stuff. Even though it's the weekend just before Ignite. On the other hand, Ignite is it's completely booked, so there's no way to get tickets over there. So, and there will be plenty of people to join on the SharePoint Saturdays as well. Now, and no other ones I'm going to get in here. Yeah, the next one is the 16th of November, three of them, which is actually pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. Now, related on Ignite, here's a nice blog post from Mark Cashman related on the Ignite sessions for those who are coming. Like I said, Ignite is fully booked, but for those who are actually coming, probably want to check all of these. If you're interested on the SharePoint OneDrive Yammer stream and related technology sessions, we don't see that, Valdek, by the way. You're waving a hand. No, just
yeah. I'm doing the minority report thing, like trying to open it up a little.
Yeah, yes.
Like, I want to zoom in. Like, is there anything that I can see in there? No.
It was -1 this morning in Helsinki, so there's no flying things in here. But apparently, the Netherlands is different. So
yes, it is. It's actually today is +12, I believe. So it's still warm. There's quite a few insects around. So
yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so Jeff Tepper has two sessions next week. So there's the main Jeff Tepper's keynote is on Monday afternoon. So this is kind of a summary on all of the things related on SharePoint OneDrive and Office on the content collaboration side. Quite end-user-driven, obviously not a developer-driven as such. And then he has a Microsoft Mechanics session on later on. So that's actually on Tuesday at 11:30. So quite nice summaries of what's actually the latest announcement. There's really cool stuff. I was reviewing some of the sessions and slides earlier today. So there are some embargo sessions which are not yet even visible in Ignite session list because we haven't been able to tell them that they're coming. So
nice. Anticipation is killing me.
Yes. Obviously, they are not mentioned in here. But anyway, there's still a good set of a nice set of other sessions related on content and team collaboration. A lot of this is obviously how do we integrate also with Teams and how do we work together with Office 365 in general, because you shouldn't think these things as an isolated services. Mm-hmm. Intelligent intranet, SharePoint news and communication sites, really big thing obviously for us, the communication site is this, and pages and modern experiences, it's the SharePoint thing. Collaboration is kind of more and more moving to the team side of the house, but certainly classic team sites, well, modern team sites can be integrated to Teams easily and all of that. So again.
Yeah, but I guess it brings us back to what we just talked about. It's that at the end of the day, it's all tools, right? And in a cloud, we have more tools available. And in the end, it's not about whether we use this or that, but how do we make the best use of everything that we can use.
Correct.
And in a way so that it helps us do our job more effectively.
Yep. So as an example, classic example, but it's always being discussed. What is the different roles between the Teams and Yammer and SharePoint and what where? And there's no
an email.
And email, there's no right or wrong. It really depends on the company culture, right? So it's really important to understand the advantages and disadvantages and then make the decision. A few things maybe to call out here. John Fan has a nice session around best practices on optimizing performance on SharePoint sites and portals. So John Fan is the one of the engineering leads related on the modern experiences, so really cool stuff. Melissa Torres, really great stuff related on information architecture, site designs, hubs, because she's the hub lady, and branding capabilities. And then on the Microsoft Search side of the house, a lot of stuff here as well. Mikael Svensson, now that he's on Microsoft side of the house, he's going to talk about the development
nice.
That one on Thursday. Is that actually competing with my session? No, it isn't. Content practices, so Jax has a nice session related on things. I'm doing the classic BMP session. We do have some new stuff coming out as well in here. So kind of a free new tooling and available. In the BMP side of the house, though, a lot of this stuff has been kind of a diluted on many sessions because that helps some people to understand what's coming. And Luca is having with Graham McNinn. Is having a SharePoint development one. That's actually an old title. It is the latest for SharePoint framework and what's V next. That title has been changed, but it hasn't been reflected in here. And a lot of IT Pro sessions and a lot of theater sessions, just to call out something related on SharePoint. Denise is on design lead, and so the latest on branding capabilities, as an example, is gone through in here. It is a really nice and good-looking session as well. So Denise owns the look and feel of SharePoint. But anyway, it is Ignite next week, 25,000-plus people, and 1,000-plus sessions, and 200-plus hands-on experiences. So that's pretty cool. So it's going to be a busy week.
Nice.
On other articles. So let's jump on David's article, check all SharePoint sites collections with App Catalog active. So this is basically a PowerShell, which is then having a how do you detect that the App Catalog has been activated in the site collection. It's basically using PMP PowerShell, and it is scanning through different sites and checking if the site collection App Catalog title list is actually existing, which is then detecting that this site collection app catalog has been enabled.
I'm trying to understand what it does exactly, because
you're connecting to that site, then you're checking if
it gets the app catalog, and then from that.
Sorry, it's in the root. It should
exactly.
be connecting to the app catalog site.
No, yeah, but it
in the app catalog URL, we have this list which is called Site Collection App Catalogs, which is actually listing what are those site collections where the app catalog has been enabled.
Exactly.
But that one is not actually connecting the app catalog site because you cannot have an app catalog in the root of the tenant. It's a small thing. But
yeah, but then it does the get PMP tenant app catalog URL,
sure.
And then it does so.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, yes, absolutely. Well, you know, it connects twice, authentication once.
Fair enough. Yep.
So, fair point.
Yes.
Useful stuff anyway. As a tenant administrator, you need to know on which site the app catalog has been enabled because you need to grant that permission explicitly if you want people to be able to install their own applications to the site collection.
So is this the official way of doing that, or is it the thing that we can do for the lack of better API?
I think this is more thing we can do due to the lack of better API, because there's no centralized API to get a list of things. But this works. It is a completely valid option as well. So no harms with that. Or you can actually go to this URL, and that's it. You will get a UI access on that. PMP PowerShell just has this quite useful PowerShell commandlet, which is get PMP tenant app catalog URL. That will then dynamically get the app catalog URL in a tenant, and then because that can be whatever, you can name your app catalog.
Yes.
Which is actually quite stupid, to be honest, but hey, that's how it has been working for years, so we're not going to. So this one, deploying application customizers with site designs, and this is really around the fact that if you are using site designs, which is definitely a great option, especially I would look into doing a default site design, making sure that whenever somebody creates any site collection in my tenant, the branding and everything else would be applied on the site collection. But this is really around the fact that if you have, for example, my application customizer here, what are the actions of getting that application customizer deployed and activated in the site which is getting created using a site design. And there's basically two steps. Main step is to make sure that you install the solution if it's not tenant deployed solution. And then this one is for activating the application customizer in the site, in the web level or in the site level, because you can actually define the scope as well.
Cool.
This one, applying multiple CSS classes for SharePoint framework, is from Dimitri. So this is really around the CSS handling guidance and different approaches of using the CSS functions and how to apply those. A quite nice blog post related on practices on the SharePoint framework development. This one is a quite long article actually from Laura. Laura writes really well and great blog posts, and this is really around the fact that teams and SharePoint provisioning, what, why, and how, and what are the ways. And one of the, how would I put it, the conceptual story on what does it mean, why would you do that, how would I make that happen, what are the different options. Now, then if you really are into that, there are separate code examples how to make these things happen. An example, one thing which is mentioned quite a few times in Laura's story is the fact that you can use the PMP provisioning engine, which is tenant provisioning engine. So you can actually provision team structures, site collections, multiple site collections, users even, OneDrive sites as part of these templates. And you can actually create a JSON template and apply it as an example. So pretty cool stuff. So Paolo has a video on that one, which was released last week. And there's a template which is in XML. Paolo prefers XML. But
something's changed. Some don't.
Now, this one is from Mark D. Anderson, using site designs to manage project life cycles. Funny enough, actually. So Derek is from the same company as Mark, so they're clearly working on site designs. But really nice article related on project lifecycle handling and the conceptual design on how the make sense happens, kind of a, how would we do these things and how would we transition? How do we, when we apply an archive project site design to actually archive the site, and we would be able to make the site, for example, as a read-only, which isn't by default supported by the site designs or site actions, but it would be one way of handling these things. You would call out an Azure function, and which would then modify things to be read-only and all of that.
So you would call flow, right? Because from site design, you can only call flow, and that needs to call function.
Sure.
But that means that in order to call function from flow, you have to have premium license because of the HTTP call.
I'm not going to talk about licensing.
Since I do not work at Microsoft, I can talk about licensing.
Yes. I work in Microsoft. I should not mention anything related. And this one, not necessarily a super development-oriented thing, Prem Dediakar, but this is around the sensitivity labels. We are going to have some announcements on all of this stuff in Ignite as well. So more and more kind of a centrally manage the sensitivity and the labeling and control the behavior of the data. So you're able to basically define different rules, what happens if the data is being confidential, if it's not confidential. I think I got an probably I shouldn't mention this, but related on this one in MSIT, I just got an email related on something that the site was being marked as a confidential, but then it was analyzed that the site is actually shared to more than 10,000 people through DLs. So you either need to go and change what's being shared to that DL or the group, or change the confidentiality level smaller, because there was a rules related on, hey, it cannot be called to be a confidential if you're sharing that to
10,000 people, yeah.
Makes perfect sense, actually. Pretty cool capability.
Yeah, nice.
To be fair, I do not know if that's an out-of-the-box one or a custom one or anything, but I got it that one, and I think that's something which where we're heading. So I don't know. I probably leaked something which I shouldn't be leaking, but hey, these things do happen. I do apologize if I did. But cool development. But let me actually close this one. So let's close Pram from the article. So any last words or things? What you guys are going to do this week?
Gary.
I'm starting internally to kind of drum the GitHub support, but not just for developers, but for everyone as well. You know, there's lots of initiatives, David Warner and Mark Anderson with the document repositories that they're working on. GitHub is not just for developers, it's for everyone, and to go through that process and just understand it, I think it's going to help. So I'm working on that. I'll be working on CLI as well, doing a lot of things behind the scene. So trying to see myself as supporting Berlin and Waldeck at the moment, of just picking up bits and pieces that may be off their radar that I can kind of contribute with. We're working on templates, making it easier to request new issues, request new commands, those kind of things. Just kind of streamline the process and change up the messaging as well, maybe. So you've talked about this previously. You know, it's not necessarily about the functionality of whatever we've written. Sometimes it's about what we're trying to achieve, what the CLI is trying to achieve, and see where we can go with that. So I've been working on that.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. What about you, Waldeck? What's on your take this week?
So from development point of view, we'll be releasing a new version of CLI, but that is next or coming weekend. Other than that, on the non-developer side of things, we're releasing new product at Rancor, and now I'm going through all the ideas of how do we bring it to people? How do we onboard them? How do we want to go about it? Do we give a big blast, or do we keep it really short with an guided onboarding and basically trying to learn one-on-one, like how people use it, how people find it. Basically, very nitty-gritty things of releasing a product on the non-dev side, which is like very intriguing. Yeah, there are so many options, and like, well, basically you can do anything depending on what you want to achieve in the end. So,
and on my side, we're obviously prepping now the Ignite sessions. So finally, feels like actually we're ahead of time, because this time I'm not creating my presentation. That's a big case. So unfortunately, but to be fair, I've done so many presentations that it's fine. think overalls are getting that. We will be soft releasing some stuff earlier this week, so making sure that everything is working already during this week, and then do the proper announcement in Ignite. I'm not going to disclose that too much, but it's really cool stuff which is coming. If you trace us in GitHub, you can actually figure out what we're doing, but I'm not going to...
Oh, you already spilled the beans.
No, but it's something what people actually do. And we found out that, I think we found out the fact that people are tracing us on GitHub because we realized that they were able to see all of our upcoming SharePoint framework documentations before we released our versions like a few years back. And then we realized that we can't do this. But this time we definitely want to go live tomorrow, day after tomorrow, with a certain thing, and then we'll do a soft launch, and then next week, bigger announcements. So. And prepping slides, prepping demos, always the same thing. So.
Nice. And I guess it makes sense, right? Because there is no need to align the dev stream with the marketing stream. Like, devs can ship whenever they're ready, and then the marketing can announce it whenever they want to announce it, whenever there is customer evidence, there is users documentation, it's ready to hit the market and not like, okay, so we're going live and we don't have anything.
Absolutely. It's super important. Obviously, whenever the documentation, you need to get the product always out before the documentation is getting out or any guidance is getting out, because otherwise, that's not a smart thing to do. There is an ongoing discussion with certain feature related on upcoming SharePoint framework where people were saying that, no, we need to get the documentation out by Ignite, which is like, yeah, but if the feature is not out, why do we need to get the documentation out? I don't get it.
Because yeah, but I mean, chicken and egg, right? I mean, you want a documentation first, but documentation is based on the product, and if that's not shipped, like, you're going to base documentation on what? The idea of it, which is kind of weird. So, yeah.
But I think that's it for now. So thank you, Gary. Sorry for those small technical issues. That seems to be a theme for the week.
Yeah, I was just going to blame Elio for last week. It's his fault.
But thank you, Waldeck, again for this one. Thank you, all the listeners and watchers who are watching this. Please keep the feedback coming. But I think that's it. So bye-bye. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.